free and infinite grace. I mean, that's astonishing. That is what Paul refers to in Romans chapter 11 when he speaks of riches coming to the Gentiles. Grace is riches. Free and immense. Infinite His grace. What a blessing is ours as we're able to sing the praises of God. And so turn in your Bibles today as we come to Romans chapter 11, verses 16 through 24. Romans chapter 11, verses 16 through 24. And if the first piece of dough be holy, the lump is also. And if the root be holy, the branches are too. But if some of the branches were broken off, and you, being a wild olive, were grafted in among them, and became partaker with them of the rich root of the olive tree, do not be arrogant toward the branches. But if you are arrogant, remember, it's not you who supports the root, but the root supports you. You will say then, branches were broken off so that I might be grafted in. Quite right. They were broken off for their unbelief, but you stand by your faith. Do not be conceited, but fear. For if God did not spare the natural branches, neither will He spare you. Behold then the kindness and severity of God to those who fail severity. But to you, God's kindness, if you continue in His kindness. Otherwise, you also will be cut off. And they also, if they do not continue in their unbelief, will be grafted in. For God is able to graft them in again. For if you were cut off from what is by nature a wild olive tree, and were grafted contrary to nature into a cultivated olive tree, how much more shall these, who are the natural branches, be grafted into their own olive tree? There is our analogy, there is our picture, there is our metaphor of root and branches and olive trees that we are going to consider as we look at verses 16 through 24 in Romans 11. Robert Bruff, an old English poet, in a poem entitled The Tent Maker's Song, declares a very sad reality of human making that we find most of the time. In fact, it deals with the very issue that this text deals with. It's the issue of pride. Pride of privilege, having something that you never earned, and then acting like somehow you deserved it, and that you are God's good gift, rather than that you have received God's good gift. Robert Bruff in this poem says this: of all the lunacies earth can boast, the one that must please the devil most is pride, reduced to the whimsical terms of causing the slugs to despise the worms. Pride, causing the slugs to despise the worms. Really, that just puts it all in its perspective, doesn't it? I mean, that's what he's dealing with. We've got some slugs and worms that we're dealing with in Romans chapter 11. The slugs and the worms are the Jews and the Gentiles. And one is tending to despise the other because of privilege. Privilege the other has rejected, and privilege that they themselves have received. How? By the grace of God. Paul has declared as he is going through these three chapters of Romans 9, 10, and 11, he's setting forth the faithfulness of God to His promises and to His people, ancient and present. And as he has set forth, indeed, that he glories in his ministry to the Gentiles because he looks to the fact that this ministry may stir up to jealousy his own kinsmen according to the flesh, to desire the riches of Jesus Christ. He has to deal with those very people whose ministry is his, the Gentiles. He has to address them for the fact that they are gloating in the grace that has come to them. Gloating in grace, boasting in blessings over those who do not have them. If it was not such an isolated matter, it would be a wonderful thing that we could pass on. But it was something that was already threatening itself in the early church at Rome. On those people who themselves had learned the truth of Paul's ministry and of the glories of the gospel. And so he begins to open this up. And in verses 16 through 24, we have Paul dealing with that pride. And how he confronts it. As he deals with this reality that also burdens his soul, and that is the spiritual condition of Israel. Israel itself is, for the main part, apart from Jesus Christ, having rejected Christ as their Messiah, and the Gentiles are coming in. This very reality Paul has declared is according to the purpose of God in verse 11. Their transgression, the transgression of the Jews, the repudiation, rejection of Christ by the Jews, by that transgression, by that rejection, God has caused the rivers of mercy and salvation to flow to the Gentiles. But it flows to the Gentiles that they may enjoy those blessings, but it flows beyond them and has a purpose. It is to make the Jews who have rejected Christ jealous. And so now Paul has to deal with that issue of Gentile pride in privilege. And he opens it up in verse 16 with something that's kind of, it seems like it's out of place. He has set forth some glorious truths in verses 12 and verse 15. If the rejection of the Jews be the reconciliation of the world of Gentiles, what will their acceptance be? That is, what will Jewish acceptance and favor with God be but life from the dead in terms that are incredibly expressed and maybe hard to understand fully? And it is on the face of that that all of a sudden he goes to a lump of dough and a roots and branches. I mean, I don't know if it strikes you when you're reading that, you're going, what in the world are we going to this agricultural analogy now? But this is what he does. Verse 16, and if the first piece of dough be holy, the lump is also, and if the root be holy, the branches are too. What's the place here? Why is it here? Because he's going to develop this figure that he presents. It prepares the way. Maybe it has some kind of linkage to what has gone before. This anticipation of Jewish reconciliation and acceptance with God. This anticipation, indeed, that even though there is a failure on the part of Israel presently, there shall come a fulfillment. And so, really trying to ground what may be that very reality, the future hope of Israel, he also now, and wanting to deal with the present reality of Gentile pride, he constructs and he brings to mind this very analogy. Analogy of a first piece of dough, and the analogy of a root and its branches. This is as you look at this very simple picture, and he really doesn't really even specify, he really doesn't give any kind of details or any identity. He just simply sets forth the picture. A picture of a first piece, first fruits, literally. First fruits of dough. And then a root and branches. It's a parallel picture. The pictures are parallel. They're different pictures. But they seek and appear to convey a similar reality. And evidently, this is a reality in which he wants to deal with really the outworking of God's purposes in salvation here. And he's going to develop this analogy further, and we're going to be able to see this figure, this metaphor, worked out in verses 17 through 24. It appears to be kind of simple, maybe just on first glance, and in terms of just stating its simple principle. It appears that what marks the first part marks the rest. What marks the beginning marks the whole. It appears to be that kind of thing, that kind of simple picture. If what we have with the very smallest part, the first part, or what we have with the beginning part and the foundation part is eventually going to mark and characterize the whole. And that's probably simply at least what the figure itself communicates. That first picture of the first fruits, the lump, is probably taken from Numbers 15. In Numbers 15, the children of Israel were instructed that when they entered into the land of promise, they were to bring their first fruits. They were to bring a pledge offering, as it were. A small offering, a pledge of the very fruit of the ground, and they present it to God, and by that they would be consecrating the rest of what they received to God. The consecration, the setting apart of that small portion designated the setting apart of the rest to God. And so he moves from that, and then he moves from that to the what is maybe more familiar to us, and that's just the simple picture of a root and a tree. What if the root is marked by soundness or holiness, so will the tree be. And so the idea here again, it seems like he uses that first picture of holiness, of the dough, of the first piece and the dough, maybe to make a transition to the holiness of the root, because we don't think of roots being holy. We don't think of necessarily of trees having holy roots. We think of offerings being holy. And as we think about this, we have to think about what does he mean by holiness? When he says that the lump is holy and the tree is holy, we need to understand holiness as we often understand it in two different ways. There is that holiness that God commands of us, and that is the holiness of moral purity and sinlessness. That is that holiness that marks God in his own moral purity and character. But there is also another aspect of holiness which is more prominent in the Old Testament, and that is the holiness of being set apart. That is when God would take something common, and then by the fact that he took it and made it his own, it became, by the fact that God himself took it to be his own, it became special. It became set apart. It became holy. It became different from everything else. And that is the picture that I believe of holiness that he's talking about here. He's not talking about that holiness which is sinlessness. He's talking about that holiness which is specialness. If the lump, if the first part is made sanctified, is set apart, devoted to God and made for God, then so is the rest. And it's the same thing that he's doing with regard to the root, I submit to you. That this root that he's talking about, that he wants to open up by analogy, is this very root is taken, set apart for God, and everything that comes out of it, all of the sap that flows through it, is going to pertain to something else set apart for me, the whole. The whole that is connected to that good root, that holy root. Now, this picture, as he goes through it, as we go down through it, as he begins to open it up through verses 17 through 24, will give us indeed a picture. He will identify really what that root is. And let me just give you at the outset what I believe that root is. That rich root, that holy root, is the fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That rich root are the fathers, the patriarchs of Israel, to whom the promises first came of worldwide blessing. In you, God says to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, I will bless all the nations of the earth. Paul calls that in Galatians chapter 3, the gospel. That's the gospel. The first gospel promise, indeed, at least as it were in terms toward a person and establishing a nation, came to Abraham. And so what I would submit to you as we work through this is that it is the patriarchs, it's the fathers, as they are called by Paul in Romans 9:5, as he speaks of the privileges of Israel. Whose are the fathers? The fathers to whom the promise came that God would through the fathers bless them and make them a great nation and bless nations through them. It is the fathers, in fact, to whom he mentions in verse 28 of chapter 11. From the standpoint of the gospel, they, that is ethnic Israel, are enemies for your sake, unbelieving Israel. But from the standpoint of God's choice, they are beloved for the sake of the fathers. It is that rich root is indeed God's choosing and God's electing, God's appointing Abraham to be, as it were, the father of that nation, and indeed Abraham through whom the promises of national blessing and worldwide blessing would come forth. That's the rich root. And it seems to me that the preliminary point that is being made here, even though, again, it's not opened up in any detail at all, and yet it will be developed, seems to be this, that Israel, as a result of God's gracious choice of the patriarchs, remains a nation set apart. Remains a nation set apart. What God has made holy will find itself still set apart, owned by God and blessed by God. In fact, I think really what he's really doing through a picture and analogy is really saying what he said in chapter 11, verse 2. God has not rejected his people whom he foreknew. Those people whom he foreknew and chose through Abraham and would bless through them. In other words, he's carrying out his purposes. He's carrying out his purposes with regard to that nation and with regard to the whole world. He carries it out through who? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The rich promise, the rich root of the patriarchs, the God's own kind purposes. In fact, Paul is declaring in figure, I would submit to you, what Jesus said expressly to the woman at the well in John 4. Salvation is of the Jews. Salvation is of the Jews. It is of the rich root of the promise made to Abraham of blessing. Blessing to the world. And so that's the beginning point. I believe that's really what he's doing here. He's just setting forth this picture. Now, having set forth that picture, now he begins to develop it. And he begins to develop it for the Gentiles' sake. That's where he begins. He applies it, and he has to apply it, interestingly, to Gentile pride and presumption and complacency. In the face of Israel's present spiritual condition of being rejected, of being broken off, of being cast off, of having stumbled, the Gentiles were riding the high crest of divine blessing through faith in Jesus Christ, blessed, enjoying the riches of reconciliation. Those very riches that Paul speaks about in verse 12 and verse 15, that their transgression of the Jews is riches for the world, and that their rejection is the reconciliation of the world. And so the Gentiles receiving reconciliation, enjoying, as it were, the riches of God's salvation that God himself had purposed, now they are themselves beginning to be puffed up by these blessings as they looked at Israel. The slug looking at the worm and now making some comparisons. Isn't it a sad thing? Isn't it a sad thing that we can be proud of grace? That we can be proud of grace? That we can be proud of something that we did not deserve? That we can be proud of blessings that come to us, and again, the minute they come to us, all of a sudden we ourselves are exalted, self-exalted with regard to the way that we look at others. And this is Paul's concern that was taking place in the church. A church that would have Jews and a church that would have Gentiles. But again, it doesn't necessarily abide, does it, with regard even to racial identity, ethnic identity. Pride just seems to be every place. And this is what he begins to do. His very assertion, the very lesson is, stop being arrogant. Stop it. Give up your pride. Quit it. That's what he says in verse 18. Don't be arrogant. And if you are arrogant, if you are inclined to be arrogant, you see, he's dealing with it. Verse 20. Do not be conceited. Quit being so high-minded. Quit being so haughty. Fear. And we'll talk about that. But this is what he's doing. And so they have no grounds for haughtiness. And so what Paul is desiring to do here is to pierce the bubble of Gentile pride. He really wants to plant. He really wants to plant some spiritual herbicide right at the root of their own hearts where pride is developing. He wants to plant truth that's going to kill the pride that is coming up in their own hearts. And he's going to set it out here. And that's what he does in verses 17 through 24. It's spiritual herbicide. It's truth. Humbling arguments. And so I'm going to give you these three arguments. Verses 17 through 18. Here's the first thing. Remember your roots. Remember your roots. If you're inclined to pride, this is what he does. He rehearses now the very sequence of Jewish rejection and Gentile salvation that he was singing the praises about in verses 11 through 15. And now he speaks of that salvation sequence. Jewish rejection, Gentile salvation, and then Jewish reception again. He takes that very picture and he puts it in terms of this analogy of the root and the branches. But he expresses it in such a way that he will deflate their pride. Now notice he says in verse 17, if some of the branches were broken off, that is, those natural Israel were broken off from that olive tree that was attached to the rich root of Abraham. If some of the branches, that is, the Jews, were broken off, and you being a wild olive, that is, the Gentiles, were grafted in among them and became partaker with them. Here's the picture. There was a pruning. There was a cutting off of certain ones. And that was the Jews. That's the condition in which Israel found itself. And notice that Paul, as he just says it, he just says simply, he didn't cut down the entire tree. He knocked off some branches. He didn't strip it completely bare. As we know already in earlier in chapter 11, he has preserved a remnant. There are still some branches remaining on that olive tree. But he has cut some of them off, and when he did that, he engrafted some other ones in. Some from what he calls a wild olive tree. You know what a wild olive tree would be? When you would say a wild olive tree, two things that you would think about. It was uncultivated, it was uncared for, and it was unprofitable. It never bore any good fruit. Now there, in a certain sense, if the Gentile is listening, he's saying, do you remember your roots? Do you remember that you were in an uncultivated soil and that you were an unprofitable people? Who do you think you were? The natural branches were broken off of this olive tree, and you, the wild, uncultivated olive tree, the unprofitable wild olive tree, you were invested, you were engrafted into the rich root of the promises of Abraham. I mean, this is the picture, isn't it? This is the way he's dealing with it. Do you realize who you are? What were we? What was our root, Gentiles? We were separate from Christ. We were strangers to the covenants of promise. We were aliens. We were without God and we were without hope. And indeed, we lived in the vanity and futility of our life, inherited from our forefathers, engaged in lusts and lustful thoughts and lies, walking according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of this age, dead objects of wrath. That's what we were. That's the root from which we came. Our root is in Adam. And our root in Adam was simply a root that was destructive and corrupting and destined for death. And he says, do you remember that? You are seeing branches broken off of a tree, and you, by divine grace, have been taken out of the uncultivated, corrupting soil in which you live that would have left your eternal damnation, and you have been engrafted into the rich olive root. You have become the sons of Abraham by faith in Jesus Christ, heirs of the promise. You have forgotten, and notice how he says it. You've become fellow partakers with those branches. You're not supplanters. You haven't knocked them out of their place. You have come into the root which they themselves enjoy, the very root in which they themselves have grown. The Old Testament root of the promise to Abraham is the root to which you have been joined, fulfilled in the Son of Abraham, the true seed of Abraham, Jesus Christ. You are nothing at all. You weren't special. You had no, there was nothing to which you were entitled, and now you have been graciously joined, grafted into the rich root of that great olive. You filled with blessing, and now you're filled with pride. If you are arrogant, I mean, don't be arrogant. And if you are arrogant, remember this. Remember not only your own roots, but remember now the root in which you are right now. You don't support that root. Abraham doesn't depend on you. Salvation doesn't depend on you. The riches of Jesus Christ fulfilled do not depend on you. You depend upon the mercy and grace that flows out of the Word of God to Israel in Abraham. That's what you lean on. I mean, listen, you want to despise the Jew. You want to look upon God's ancient people and basically say, listen, I am the end all of it all. No, no, no. You rest on the word that He's given to that nation from the very beginning. You don't support the root. Your blessing comes from the same root that Israel's blessing comes from. There's only one root. There's only one tree. And branches not attached to that root, whether they're Jewish or Gentile, are doomed to wither and die. That's the point that he's making here. Get off your high horse and remember who you are. The sap of salvation blessing that flows to you Gentiles comes out of the root of the promise made to Abraham and his seed, Christ. And so remember that. Remember your roots, dear people. Remember, in fact, remember is what I think about when he says that word of Titus chapter 3. As he says, we once were foolish ourselves, disobedient, deceived, enslaved to various lusts and pleasures, spending our life in malice and envy, hateful, hating one another, rooted in Adam, rooted in this world, subject to the prince of the power of the air. This is the unfruitful sewage that flowed out of our lives. Remember, formerly you were this. But when the kindness of God, our Savior, and His love for mankind appeared, He saved us, not on the basis of deeds that we've done in righteousness, but according to His mercy in Christ. You see, what you were, do you remember? This is just a helpful truth here. Pride, people, comes from forgetting our roots, our real roots. Have you forgotten your roots? I mean, how is it that there's any way that we can ever, as we look on any saint or sinner, ourselves be puffed up, boastful, proud of grace? There is no way. What do we have? What do we have that we have not received from God? What blessing? And what blessing do we have from God that is immeasurable, indeed, that we can't even take measure of or count the sum and number of them, indeed, that we were entitled to? None of it. And God, by His mercy, through the gospel, has brought to us the blessing promised to Abraham through His holy seed, Jesus Christ, and we, believing, are joined into that rich root of promise. Don't forget. Robert Haldane says, nothing but the constant lessons of the Spirit of God will teach men that all the difference between men is the grace of God. It's not you, is it? It's God that made the difference. To God be the glory, not to men. And so there's where he's going. But Paul knows that pride, especially spiritual pride, has deep, deep roots. And so he presses his argument even further in verses 19 through 22. Here he says, and I'm just going to say, not only remember your roots, but respect God's dealings. Respect God's dealings. Revere God's dealings. Fear God's dealings. Fear God. That's where he goes. Do not be conceited, but fear. I mean, there is nothing that we ought to fear more than God. Amen. And if we fear God, we will fear pride. If we fear God, we will fear a sinful boasting and presumption and complacency indeed that sets our eyes above anyone else, and indeed the privileges that we have somehow as making us worthy or more worthy than others. And so look at this. Notice he takes up the prideful speech, as it were, and he puts in the lips of one of those Gentiles the language of pride in verse 19. You will say then, well, branches were broken off so that I might be grafted in. I say I because that's the emphasis. Yes, yes, yes. Paul, I understand. Indeed, I owe a great debt to Abraham. Yes, I understand. Indeed, it is a rich root. Indeed, it's a Jewish root. I'll acknowledge that. But look who that root is for. That root's for me. It's for me. It's I, that I might be grafted in. Yes, look here, look here. This is God's purpose and design. They were severed so that I might be saved. They were broken off for my sake. Now, Paul acknowledges a certain truth there. Quite right. You can't deny it. He's already declared it. He's already declared it in verse 11, 12, and 15. He's already declared that in a certain sense that's exactly right. But what he's concerned about is the presumption and the attitude behind this grace that has come to them, the severing, and indeed the fact that they are now the beneficiaries of it. Notice what he says. It's not because you're so hot, because you're not. He didn't say it that way, but notice what he says. You were broken off. I mean, they were broken off, as you say. And you were grafted in, as you say. But I want you to understand something now, and I want you to think about this. This is what he wants them to think about. They were broken off for their unbelief. You stand by your faith. He changes it now, because in the earlier argument, in the pruning of the branches and in the engrafting of the wild olive into that rich olive tree, that was all language of God's grace. That the pruning was of God and the engrafting is by God. But now he speaks to the human responsibility, he speaks to the human failure of Israel, and he speaks to the human blessing that the Gentiles have enjoyed. You stand by faith. They were broken off from unbelief. And you say, now how does that argue the point? Let me just say it this way. Yes, Israel was broken off. Broken off because of their own pride and presumption. Broken off because of their own self-confidence and complacency of place. Broken off because they themselves became confident not in the God and His grace that gave them those privileges, but the very privileges that they themselves enjoyed. They saw their treasure not in God's grace, but they saw their treasure in the very things that God has given to them. They were broken off because they compared themselves with others and were satisfied that they knew better, taught better, lived better. Broken off because they trusted in themselves that they were righteous and others were not. Broken off because they did not look to Christ for righteousness, but they trusted in their own. Broken off because it mattered more to them how they looked to men and compared with men than how it looked and how they compared with the living God. In other words, what he's saying is they were broken off for an unbelief that was manifested in the very same pride and presumption and complacency that is marking you. And if you continue in that, you will not stand. I mean, that's the concern. It's a subtle thing. Yeah, they were broken off for unbelief, but do you know, indeed, the very attitude behind that? They themselves, hearing the promises, having the fathers, having the law, having the Messiah promised to them, they themselves began to rest in privilege, began to rest in their place, in their temple, in their books, in their ritual, in their ceremony, in the fact that they themselves had all of that revelation. And yet when it came down to trusting and leaning and looking to the living God, they did not. They were broken off. And indeed, in the very root of the unbelief which marked them is now finding its fruit among you. You stand by faith. By faith. Were you any better? Did you deserve indeed what they rejected? How did you receive this salvation? Did you receive it because you were so worthy? Because you were so smart? Because you were so deserving? You received it by faith.